From the ACC, this is Kim Eagle, the editor-in-chief of ACC.org, with this week's Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. On today's podcast, you're going to hear from Peter Block and Deepak Bhatt. They teamed up to cover some of the really important late-breaking clinical trials at this recent American Heart Association meeting in Anaheim. I think you'll find some of these trials to be potentially practice-changing, and look forward to your response.
I'm Peter Block in Anaheim, California, at the AHA annual meeting for On the Scene. With me to my left is Deepak Bhatt from the Brigham and Women's in Boston, and to my far left, Tony DiMaria, an old friend from San Diego. And we are redoing day three, the wrap-up. So we have a couple of trials we want to talk about today, guys. Redual PCI and COMPASS. And I think we'll start with Redual PCI. So this is a subgroup analysis, dabigatran versus warfarin triple therapy, dabigatran plus aspirin. And the question is whether or not that is or is not better than the triple therapy. So comments.
Sure. So, you know, the main paper had been published already in the New England Journal. This was examining some of the subgroups, such as ACS patients versus non-ACS, bare metal versus drug-eluting stent, the ticagrelor subgroup, which isn't huge, but still, you know, a bit over 400 patients. And the bottom line is the results here were consistent with the overall paper. That is, a lot less bleeding with double therapy, with the dabigatran regimens, versus full-dose triple therapy, that is aspirin, clopidogrel, full-dose warfarin. So consistent with the overall trial, consistent with the PIONEER trial conceptually, that full-dose triple therapy, aspirin, clopidogrel, warfarin, just causes a ton of bleeding, and it's not clear that that results in any meaningful efficacy.
Okay, so we were looking at this before and talking about whether or not clinically now this changes the way we do things. Deepak, you're changing already. You've already changed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Changed.
I mean, I don't use full-dose triple therapy. I think the way to go is either a NOAC or warfarin with clopidogrel, aspirin in the hospital, but stop it on discharge. I think, in general, that's a safer approach. Are there some high-risk subgroups where you might be careful? Well, one bit of insight from the Redual analyses, especially in the ACS patients, the lower dabigatran dose, you know, numerically there was a sign of more ischemic events, so less bleeding, but, you know, a price to pay. So it's a matter, I think, of tailoring therapy. For most patients, if you're using dabigatran, for example, this trial would suggest to go with the 150, but you might consider the lower dosing in places where it's available. The specific dose here isn't available easily in the U.S. for the lower dose dabigatran, but that it really it's a matter of weighing the trade-offs between ischemic and bleeding events.
Tony, your thoughts?
So I think in people who are at very high risk to bleed that the 150 were it available would be very attractive. For some of us, Peter, the ability to quantify the warfarin effect with an INR is very appealing. Giving dabigatran even at 150, one is never quite sure what the effect is going to be. But nevertheless, the data are quite compelling that clearly this approach is better than triple therapy as it currently
is. I would agree. The INR may be great, but the INR varies so much in my patients, I'm going to give it up as well.
Well, you know, one other thing in Redual, in the overall trial results, is there was significantly less intracranial hemorrhage with the double therapy. Happened to be with dabigatran, but I think it could be extrapolated to the other NOACs versus full-dose triple therapy. So it's not just bleeding in general, it includes the really bad bleeding that is increased with full-dose triple therapy.
Okay, let's move on. There is another trial, COMPASS, rivaroxaban, low-dose versus rivaroxaban, higher dose. This is peripheral disease and coronary disease, plus or minus aspirin. An interesting study where the outcomes were primarily MACE, plus also some peripheral outcomes. Tony, do you want to just take that one?
So this was a group of patients with CAD, stable CAD, or PAD, or both, of course. So traditionally, what most of us have done in these patients is aspirin. That's recommended. And the question was, if you added DOAC, specifically in this case rivaroxaban, would you further reduce events? And of course, the study was positive, especially at the lower dose, at 2.5. It was not so positive at 5. And the lack of dose responsiveness needs to be explained. That remains a question. Here in this particular sub-analysis, they looked at the cost benefit, couldn't do cost effectiveness because we don't have a price for the lower dose of rivaroxaban. In fact, it's not even available yet. And not surprisingly, in one of those who's buried in Grant's tomb questions, if you reduce events, surprisingly, you reduce cost, and that's exactly what they found. So again, more evidence that I think for most of us, when the lower dose of Riva becomes available, probably we will use it in these patients with CAD-PAD.
But it's important to say plus aspirin, right? Because the 5 milligrams of rivaroxaban did not have an aspirin in that group. And that made a difference because the lower dose was better. My takeaway from this is if you're going to give a NOAC, you've got to give aspirin as well. Would you agree with that?
Well, so it depends. Just to be clear with the audience, this isn't an AFib trial like Redil was.
No,
these are stable
that.
CAD and PAD. And here, aspirin plus a very low dose of rivaroxaban, much lower, a quarter of the dose of the AFib dose, seemed to be a great strategy. And what this new analysis shows is that, you know, the costs associated with things like amputations and ischemic strokes are quite high. Those events were reduced in this study.
So you reduce cost.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, we all of us use aspirin now, right? Aspirin use in these patients is well over 95%. So this is adding on the Riva, as you pointed out.
Okay, two good trials for day number three. Thank you. I'm Peter Block in Anaheim, California at the AHA annual meeting for On the Scene. And with me to my left is Deepak Bhatt from the Brigham and Women's in Boston, and the far left is Tony DiMaria from San Diego. And we're talking about the wrap-up of day number four here at the AHA annual meeting. We want to talk about two trials, ALL-STAR and Reduced Left Atrial Pressure, LAP. ALL-STAR, an interesting trial. I mean, really, Tony, are we still talking about stem cells? I thought they were buried in Grant's tomb. But the fact of the matter is, there are some interesting new data out of ALL-STAR.
To say that the enthusiasm for stem cell therapy has waned would be a gross understatement. Nevertheless, there was a positive trial with cardiospheres. These are stem cells derived from the myocardium, from myocardial biopsy. And there was an early study that was positive in humans in reducing myocardial infarct size, scar size. And so ALL-STAR was a much bigger trial that was undertaken to see if administration of these myocardially derived stem cells could in fact reduce infarct size and enhance the amount of viable muscle. And I guess if you cut to the chase, the study was neutral. The stem cell therapy did not have a beneficial effect on the primary endpoint, myocardial infarct size. However, I think all of us would probably agree that myocardial infarct size by MRI is a difficult primary endpoint and one that perhaps has some limited precision. Interestingly, LV volumes were reduced, and it looked like there was a positive effect on cardiac function. And some subsequent work looking at the paracrine effect of these cells, especially at exosomes, has been very interesting and clearly hypothesis generating. So one of those studies where the primary endpoint is negative, but there's some very intriguing findings that indicate that there may be a benefit.
Deepak, you must have some thoughts.
Yeah, no, I would agree with everything that Tony said. I think that there's intriguing signals in there. I don't think it's enough to run with on its own, but should there be further studies? Yeah, why not?
The exosome business is really very interesting. I mean, I was thinking, you know, someday we'll put exosomes transcatheter into the myocardium and maybe the paracrine effect of all that will, in fact, help us. But the volumes business is intriguing and clearly hypothesis generating, like we've been generating hypotheses for the past multiple years.
Yes. Well, you know, they say stem cells have great potential and always will have.
That's a good line. I actually hadn't heard that before.
I like that.
It's a little stem cell humor.
reduce left atrial pressure. I'm going to let Deepak run with this one.
Sure. So this is an intriguing concept as well, popping a shunt between the right and the left atrium to reduce left atrial pressure in patients that have heart failure with preserved ejection fraction. That's a tough group of folks to do with. Nothing clearly works in those people. And the study looked promising. I mean, it's a small, mechanistic study, but it looked pretty good. There were beneficial effects, it seemed, on things like pulmonary capillary wedge pressure. So it's something I believe that would merit further study.
Yeah, for the hemodynamicists among us, if you do something that goes left to right across the atrium, it's going to increase right ventricular and right atrial size, whether you like it or not, over time, more likely than not. And it always worries me when you decrease left atrial pressure and decrease wedge pressure, that's going to decrease pulmonary artery pressure. But if you increase volume on the other side by the left to right shunt, PA pressure will go up. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. And I think hemodynamically, we just have to see how it works out over time. Tony, any last thoughts?
So there's preclinical data that this has been studied fairly intensively, and there have been some issues along the way, some issues regarding thrombosis and then the addition of a valve to ensure unidirectional flow. The preclinical study has actually been positive given all the limitations of preclinical studies and limited duration. I do think, given the absence of any really good therapy for HFpEF, that this is something that's worth pursuing.
Yeah. Okay, so two interesting trials on day four, and that'll wrap it up for AHA annual meeting. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Eagle's Eye View, your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. All of the material discussed on the podcast can be found on our ACC.org website. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts.